It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
The nation didn't grow last quarter like we thought,
but it did indeed grow. Kind of.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Bob Moon in for Bill Radke. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Friday, August 27th. The nation's second quarter GDP gets revised downward. That story straight ahead.
Ben Bernanke speaks at Jackson Hole. How's that rebuilding effort going in New Orleans 5 years after Katrina? And later, have you friended mom or dad on Facebook? A lot of kids think that's not so cool. But first, government announced today it revised the second quarter GDP annual growth rate downward to 1.6%. Jill Schlesinger is editor-at-large at CBS MoneyWatch. She's with us from New York this morning. Hi, Jill.
Good morning.
Seems like we're going backwards here. What's going on?
Yeah, I think you're right. In the fourth quarter of 2009, we saw a growth of 5%. In the first quarter, that went down to 3.7% growth. We had that initial estimate at 2.4%. Now we're at 1.6% growth. Boy, that is the wrong direction and somewhat worrisome for the economy.
So, Jill, does this mean the nation has experienced all the growth it could muster for a while?
Well, unfortunately, we could be seeing that. Right now, the government is wearing off their stimulus spending, and companies are coming to the end of the process of what's called restocking their inventory. So no new dollars in any big way coming to hit the economy in the near term.
And this seems to me, Jill, that this is a real number, right? The GDP, it talks about output and manufacturing and things like that. Does this give us a better idea of where the economy is?
Yeah, it really is all-encompassing. And frankly, it puts a little bit of a damper on how we head into the weekend, because with these numbers, you don't feel really good about the outlook for jobs or wages or housing, the things that impact our lives for real. GDP going down, never a good thing, and certainly under 2%. Definitely a bad way to come into the end of the summer.
All right, Jill Schlesinger at CBS Money Watch in New York. Thanks, Jill.
Thank you.
Here's the number investors and economists have been anxiously awaiting, the government's latest estimate on the growth rate of the American economy. Yes, it was down from 2.4% annual growth to 1.6%, but that's not quite as much as many experts had feared. Joining us now is Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial. Good morning, and despite Wall Street's reaction, is 1.6% growth really such good news?
Well, thanks, Bob. No, it really isn't. You know, 1.5% growth rate in the fourth quarter of last year, GDP grew 5%. So we are clearly losing steam as we head into the second half of the year. But again, Wall Street is Wall Street, and better than expected is better than expected.
Okay. We're all going to be paying close attention to what Fed Chair Bernanke has to say to the economic conference in Wyoming a few minutes from now. Why is his take on all this so important?
Well, I think the key is this. We all know the economy is losing momentum. There's a ton of controversy over the fiscal stimulus Congress gave us last year, and tremendous resistance to revisiting that this year. So we're all looking to the Fed for help. We'd love to see the Fed do something to drive interest rates lower and maybe help turn the trend towards stronger growth in the future.
You know, Chris, it seems like just yesterday everybody was so worried about Europe's economy. Now we're back to focusing on how we're doing here. Briefly, how do you think that turnabout happened?
Well, the quick answer is that Germany's GDP growth was stunningly strong in the second quarter, actually stronger than China in the second quarter, fastest growing economy in the world. The problems in Europe are isolated to the periphery. It's Greece and Spain and Ireland. Here in the U.S., it's pretty much nationwide.
Chris Lowe is chief economist at FTN Financial. Thanks for your insights.
You're welcome. Thank you.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us in the United States. Central bankers and economists from around the world are in Jackson Hole, Wyoming today, meeting about policy and things that they can do to kickstart a weak recovery. The Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke told the audience this morning that while the recovery has dimmed, the Fed is ready to help reignite things. But there seems to be a difference of opinion over what to do next. Marketplace's John Dimsdale now with what the Fed can and cannot do.
Lowering short-term interest rates is the Fed's usual tool to stimulate the economy, but that's not an option now since they're already zero. One idea is for the Fed to stop paying interest to banks that have parked their reserves at the Fed. The theory is that would force the banks to take the money out to find more profitable uses and maybe lend some of it. T. Rowe Price economist Alan Levinson says not necessarily.
They're just going to take the money and put it in other overnight and short-term assets. They're not going to lend it to you and me. They're too worried they're not going to get their money back.
One radical suggestion is for the Fed to force banks to lend by giving them currency that expires if they don't spend it. Wharton Business School professor Jeremy Siegel says that's a bad idea.
We know there are hundreds of billions of dollars held outside the U.S., people holding at safekeeping, and if there's any nervousness, there could be a terrible run on the dollar that could bring big disruptions.
With only weak options left, Fed watchers are wondering how can Ben Bernanke instill confidence that the Federal Reserve can rescue the economy, should it be necessary. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
A nearly two-week-long traffic jam in Beijing, China, is starting to ease up. Drivers can now get through in just a few hours instead of days. In the midst of that, a Beijing suburb has announced it's soon going to begin testing a new futuristic bus that would be built on tall legs, allowing passengers to travel above all the cars on the highway. No, it's not a joke. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports.
The vehicle travels on rails and straddles two lanes of traffic, allowing cars to drive 15 feet below where its passengers sit. It'll hold 1,200 people and travel up to 50 miles per hour. Its $7.5 million price tag is roughly one-tenth of what it costs to build a subway of the same length. It wasn't bad timing for Songyo Zhou. The inventor rolled out the blueprints of his 3D express bus the same week that Beijing's epic traffic jam made international headlines. Song says his company will lay a few miles of track for the bus in the Beijing suburb of Mentougou next year. If the pilot project works, says Song, he'll add another 100 miles of track. But not everyone likes this idea. Transportation expert Oh Guo Li says Beijing traffic is already dangerous. This bus will just make it worse. He doubts it'll be the perfect solution. Something's got to be done, though, says Oh, to ease traffic congestion. An additional 350 million people are expected to move to China's cities in the next 15 years. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Want to see what the bus looks like? We have links at marketplace.org.
British researchers have successfully mapped the genetic makeup of wheat, and they've released the raw data today. The BBC's Rebecca Singer reports now on how the scientific breakthrough could help wheat farmers around the world.
Cracking the genetic secrets of this humble plant means scientists can now start to develop wheat crops better able to cope with harsh conditions. We've already seen the effect of droughts and wildfires in Russia on the price of wheat this summer. Russia banned sales of wheat to other countries in an attempt to keep the cost of bread under control. Professor Mike Bevan is director of the John Innes Centre in Norwich, which worked on the project. He says this new research will also help farmers increase production.
Because in the next 20 or 30 years, there will be many more mouths to feed in the world, and wheat has a very important role to play in feeding the world's population.
And doing that will also help to stabilise food prices. It's predicted that within the next 40 years, world food production will need to increase by 50%. And other scientists say this breakthrough gives companies the tools to breed new plants using either conventional or genetically modified techniques. But if you ever thought wheat was a simple crop, just think. Its genetic code is five times longer than humans. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
Toyota has issued yet another big recall of its cars. This time it involves some engine problems in the popular Corolla. Marketplace's Amy Scott joins us live this morning with details. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Bob.
So what's the problem this time? Sticky gas pedals again?
No, this time it's engine trouble. Toyota is recalling more than a million Corolla sedans and Matrix hatchbacks, the 2005 through 2008 model years. A defective part can apparently cause the engines to stall at any speed. And meanwhile, General Motors is recalling 200,000 Pontiac Vibes for the same issue. Those cars were built in a joint venture with Toyota.
You know, it seems there have been so many of these recalls. At this point, what's the significance of another recall?
Right. Well, it does add to the 10 million cars recalled in the last year, most famously for unintended acceleration. But I talked this morning with Hans Greimel from Automotive News. He says this one is significant partly because it involves one of Toyota's most popular models.
The Corolla has a long history of being one of the most reliable and affordable cars in the Toyota lineup, and it's really what helped Toyota make its reputation for reliability and quality.
Now, I should point out that Toyota says there have been just 3 unconfirmed accidents alleged to be related to this problem, and with one minor injury.
We've been hearing a lot about Toyota's efforts to fix all these safety problems, including that unintended acceleration earlier. When do we see that pay off?
Right. Well, it does take a while to discover these problems as people spend more time driving the cars. So Greimel says it may be a few years before we see if Toyota's really managed to turn things around.
Marketplace's Amy Scott live. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good news for the people who make unmanned vehicles. Many of them are gathering today in Denver to show off their products. Colorado Public Radio's Zachary Barr has more.
A robot that looks like a mini tank ambles along the convention center floor. It can frighten you, like by siren, and it can kill you several different ways.
It can shoot you in single shot. It can shoot you with with the machine gun, if you like. You can also use the 40 millimeter on the side there.
Rich Lehman works for Kinetic, the machine's manufacturer. Hundreds of other companies are here, too, exhibiting robots that crawl, swim, and fly. The unmanned vehicle industry is a $6 billion business, and spokeswoman Lindsay Voss says it's looking to get even bigger.
You know, when you think about crop dusting, what a great and efficient way to use an aircraft if you could do it remotely or autonomously.
The trouble is, while public agencies like police and border control can operate unmanned planes, civilians cannot. So in addition to developing robotic soldiers and crop dusters, the industry is looking to make peace with federal regulators. In Denver, I'm Zachary Barr for Marketplace.
People inside and outside of New Orleans think the city's recovery after Hurricane Katrina has been slow and uneven. 5 years after the devastating storm, Marketplace's Eve Troh checked out the Big Easy with the man who heads up the government's rebuilding efforts there.
Omid Sate describes his agency's goal like this.
Trying to build pockets of strength and doing it everywhere.
Sate directs the New Orleans Redevelopment Authority. He took me on a city recovery tour. Our first stop was St. Claude Avenue. The wide street divides 2 neighborhoods called the Bywater and St. Rock. One's doing well, the other flooded, and it's lagging. Sate's pushing the city to restore a streetcar line down the middle.
So this is actually the old streetcar named Desire Line. As that streetcar line comes back, we think that this, again, will become a much more desirable place for people to invest and live in.
Convincing residents is just one part of the equation. Project investors are another. Sate spends a lot of time on the phone arranging deals.
Well, go ahead and submit it. We're going to extend the deadline.
But that's why we got the subsidies in there.
He admires the individual homeowners who rebuilt. They got New Orleans back on its feet. But to grow from here, he says the city needs to solve the puzzle of large-scale development.
It's much cheaper to build 20 or 30 or 40 houses at a time than it is to build one. But you can't either get financing or identify demand ahead of time for all of those properties. And so people are forced to build a few at a time, which makes their costs go up, which makes it harder to find buyers.
Sate drives across a drawbridge to the lower Ninth Ward. This area flooded more than 10 feet. Now a new flood wall is in place, and right behind it,
we see 4 houses built right behind this.
Behind where the levee breach was, couldn't pick a more illogical location for 4 homes to go. There's not another house within blocks of these. They're right next to what is a dump.
Sate says no government subsidy went into this project. It's
private investors choosing to put these homes up and people choosing to live there.
He says speculators can buy property in flooded areas for cheap and rent it. But Sate's agency wants to restore home ownership to these areas. And this may be the main conflict of rebuilding. Government aiming for the top, while the real estate market races to the bottom. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
New York recently became one of the last states to switch to no-fault divorce. That means couples can dissolve a marriage without the need for one spouse to accuse the other of misbehavior like adultery. We wondered how the new law might affect those who make their living off suspicious spouses.
My name is Jay Salpeter. I'm a retired New York City detective. I've been since 1992. I've been a licensed private investigator in New York State. My experience, 98.5% of spouses that come in here to speak to me, 98.5 of their spouses are cheating. When we started surveillance, you know, I hope they have a nice evening out, because if they have a nice evening out, I have a nice evening out. So if they go into a nice restaurant, I will tell you I'm going in too. There's so many stories. We've trailed someone to Bermuda. We've trailed someone to Mexico. You have your typical cases, but then you always have your interesting cases. I've had a couple. I mean, a husband of a school teacher hired me to follow his wife when she left school. The good news was it wasn't another man, but the bad news, it was another female school teacher. You know, in other businesses, unfortunately, when laws change, you know, you lose business. I have no fear in this law coming into effect, because it comes down to, I want to know. I need to know if my spouse is cheating. They really want to have closure. I have no doubt in my mind that it will not affect my business one bit.
And Jay Salpeter's story came to us from producer Sally Herships. A survey out this week says a third of teenagers on Facebook are ready to unfriend mom or dad. The research from AOL and Nielsen shows kids see the web as a way to get away from their parents and not be vulnerable to mom's embarrassing pictures or stories.
14% say there were way too many adults on Facebook. Another 16% of teens say they're leaving the site now that their parents have joined.
And finally, fess up, you traveling businessmen. It seems the British-based hotel chain Travelodge has reunited customers with more than 75,000 teddy bears and other stuffed animals in just the last 12 months.
And the chain got curious. 35% of the adults surveyed admit they sleep with their teddy for comfort away from home.
But you might find it even more surprising that 25% of men, 1 in 4, take their stuffed animals away on business. Please don't spread this around, but mine's named Fluffy.
Mine's named Philip. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Bob Moon. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
Fluffy. Put a chain around my neck and leave me anywhere. Oh, let me be. Oh, let it be. Oh, teddy bear. Oh, let me be. Oh, let it be your teddy bear. I just want to be.
American Public Media. The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.